Roger watched him go. He looked around him at the massive ship, hoping to find some clue as to where they were or how to escape. Several old-world vehicles were parked on the deck, a truck with oversized tires and a mounted machine gun in the bed, and three cars covered with armor plating. They all appeared to be in working order, with petrol tanks and oil canisters sitting beside them. There were also fuel cells on the deck to power the trucks that didn't run on the archaic fuel. Beyond the vehicles was a metal garage with two wide doors, both of them half open. Inside were more cars, a few motorcycles, and gigantic shipping containers. More people in the armored suits were loading what looked like cryogenic capsules into the containers. Roger turned his head the other direction, straining to see more. Tarps covered bulky shapes along the bow. One of them wasn't tied down properly, and he caught a glimpse of what lay beneath. Cages. Dozens of them. Several barrels burned along the railing on the ship, spreading an orange glow over the occupants. No way. Nobody's that crazy. Chained sirens, all of them apparently unconscious. The cages were stacked like crates, three high, and who knew how many deep. This was some sort of cargo ship, and Roger had a feeling he and Magnolia had been added to the manifest. But what the hell would these people be doing with captured sirens, not to mention him and Mags? His answer came a few minutes later when one of the armored soldiers opened a cage and dragged a siren across the deck. It slowly came to, head cranking from side to side to look at its captors. It clawed at the air, but the man with the chain yanked the beast to the deck as two more soldiers strode forward with machetes. They hacked the creature to pieces without even bothering to kill it first. Blood spattered the rust-coated deck as it let out an inhuman wail. When the men had finished butchering it, they brought pieces over to the barrels and set them on grates over the top. Roger's stomach churned. Now he knew where the barbecue smell was coming from. He had to get out of here before he and Magnolia suffered the same fate. The red glow of the lighthouse drew his attention. It flashed several times, then went dark. A horn sounded, and the armored men stopped what they were doing. They looked up at the tower that rose above the metal roof amidships. Screaming in the foreign dialect came from all directions, and Magnolia finally stirred. The alarm sounded again. Footfalls came toward him, and the man with the machine gun and the skulls on his shoulders crouched down between him and Mags. He looked at Roger first, and Roger saw that the man had only one working eye behind the almond-shaped visors. The other eye was milky white.
"You speak the English, yes?" he said in his deep voice.
Roger nodded warily. He noticed an octopus engraving on the breast of the man's chest armor. Was it some sort of a symbol like the raptor? The man checked Roger's bonds with his good eye, making sure they were tight.
"You will no get away like the others," he said in broken English.
He paused to look up at a man who had emerged in the lookout tower above. Then he looked back at Roger.
"They call me El Pulpo. I am king of the Cazadores."
"I'm Rajman," Roger said, trying to be polite. "I'm from the Hive." The man tilted his helmet as if trying to figure out what to make of him. Roger did the same.
"Who are the Cazadores?" Roger asked.
"Last of the humans."
He raised a long, metal-clad finger at the containers.
"We come every 6 months, save those frozen ones we can, and bring back to our metal islands. We breed them there."
"And what do you want with us?" Roger asked,
hoping it wasn't the latter option. Especially for Magnolia's sake.
"You see soon."
He stood and slung his rifle over his back.
"Live long enough. You see the sun."
"The sun?" Roger said, uncomprehending. He wanted to ask questions, but he was so terrified he could hardly form a sentence. Was it really possible that these barbarians were taking him to an island where the sun would shine? El Pulpo turned his working eye to Magnolia and leered.
"Pretty. Not many as nice as this one on our island.
He laughed, a humorless cackle that made Roger shiver.
Big plans for this one.
Leave her alone, Roger said. Don't touch her, or I'll...
The man looked back at Roger and laughed again. The deck suddenly vibrated, metal groaning as the gargantuan ship began to move. The klaxon sounded a third time, and the anchor chain clanked onto the deck on the starboard side. The ship was setting sail, and Roger had no idea where it was headed. 27. The street raced by in gray and brown flashes as X gunned the engine of his motorcycle. Miles, apparently unconcerned by the speed, sat calmly in his custom seat, enjoying the ride. Les had volunteered to come along and help find Roger and Magnolia, but X told the others to stay behind. The ship needed repairing, and Layla needed saving. Michael had refused to leave her side. Seeing the young man's pain brought back a feeling that X had suppressed during his long exile on the surface. It was an emotion that he shared easily with Miles, but he hadn't felt it for another human in a very long time. Hell, X had never been good at loving people. Another emotion swirled through him as he drove, an emotion he was good at feeling. Anger. He was angry at Jordan. He was angry at the militia soldiers he had been forced to gun down, including his old friend Sergeant Jenkins, who had apparently sold his soul. And he was furiously, righteously angry at the Cazadores who had kidnapped Roger and Magnolia. He wanted to dismember them alive for daring to steal his friends away so soon after he had found them again.
Focus, old man. Save them first, then worry about getting payback.
The bike zoomed toward the coast, swerving around debris and jolting over cracks in the pavement. As soon as X and Michael had carried Layla into the airship, the ship's AI had shown them the video feed of an old-world truck racing away from the area where Roger and Magnolia had vanished. X had a feeling he knew where the seagoing bastards were taking his friends. The lighthouse had stopped blinking several minutes ago, and a horn signaled that the others were preparing to leave the harbor. He didn't have much time. If he didn't get to the ship, Roger and Magnolia would be lost forever, assuming they were still alive now. X continued to debate whether he should have told the divers the truth about the cannibals. He knew from his own experience in captivity just what they planned to do to his friends. He had always wondered whether there were people on the surface, but these were not the sort of people Captain Ash had hoped to discover. Somehow these pirates, or barbarians, or whatever they were, had gone undetected by the Hive and other airships all this time, and X had wanted to keep it that way. But now the bastards had his friends. He stared at the tower in the distance. Since his captivity, he had learned much about these people, mostly by watching and studying them from afar. Many years ago, the Cazadores had left their home in the Metal Islands and used the lighthouses to lure human survivors of the wars. People who had surfaced from bunkers or ITC facilities to repopulate the Earth. Later, when stocks ran low, the Cazadores had turned to the next best thing. Sirens. Then to the people and animals still frozen in the cryogenic chambers. And now, Roger and Magnolia were on the menu, although X had a feeling they would use Magnolia for other purposes. The Cazadores had clearly sacrificed their humanity on the altar of their own survival. Now they were animals, barely more human than the sirens they hunted. It was precisely why X had lied to Michael and the other divers. They didn't come from some utopian society basking under the sun. The pirates came from a dark world where men ate whatever meat they could find, including their own species. At the next bridge, X twisted the throttle and sped up the ramp, finally getting a view of the beach. The ship was already pulling away from the pier. The speedometer ticked up to 90 miles per hour over an open stretch of road. The sky was remarkably clear, with not a siren in sight. Chances were the Cazadores had captured and killed most of the beasts that were stupid enough to come out of their lairs. But there were always more out there hiding and waiting. X steered onto another road at the bottom of the bridge, weaving between charred hulls and melted vehicles. He reached 100 miles per hour on the final stretch to the beach. The ruined coastline stretched northward. Tsunamis had leveled this area centuries ago, crushing the buildings and washing away everything but the foundations. Destroyed boats, sheets of metal, amorphous hunks of plastic, and other debris littered the beach. X parked the bike behind a brick wall and unbuckled Miles. The dog jumped out, and X grabbed the backpack he had designed for carrying the dog in unusually dicey situations. Then he grabbed his assault rifle and a noise-suppressed long rifle, which he slung over his shoulder, flattening the backpack against him. Next, he shouldered the machine gun as he ran out into the junkyard, barrel pointing at the deck. Several Cazadores manned machine gun nests on the ship's deck, keeping an eye out for sirens in the sky. The junkyard would provide plenty of cover, but he and Miles would have to make it quick. He darted around the mounds of sheet metal and concrete slabs, running faster than he had thought possible, his dog at his heels. Lightning cracked across the sky like muzzle flashes from an automatic rifle. He eyed a metal ladder running down the side of the ship. A guard manned the nearest turret above the deck, but his eyes were on the clouds. If he looked in X's direction, he would have him and Miles dead to rights in his kill zone. X swapped the assault rifle for the long rifle and knelt behind the split hull of a boat. He brought the scope up and centered the crosshairs right between the two almond-shaped lenses in the guard's helmet. With the noise-suppressed barrel lined up, he waited for a bolt of lightning and the following thunderclap. A flash speared the sky nearly a mile away, and he counted 4 seconds until the thunder boomed, pulling the trigger with the noise. As soon as the shot was away, X lowered the rifle and started running again. The man slumped over, blood trickling out of his helmet and onto the deck below. X sprinted from the beach and onto the concrete pier. The ladder wasn't far, just 200 feet. But the ship was picking up speed. X slowed, unslung his weapons, and strapped Miles into the custom pack and onto his back. A moment later, X was running with the weapons hanging over his chest and Miles high on his back. The massive ship was slipping out into the dark ocean. Waves slapped the pier behind X, water sloshing over the concrete platform. He reached out and grabbed the ladder, his boot sliding on the metal rung for a heart-skipping moment. Gritting his teeth, he climbed toward the railing 50 feet above. He flattened his body against the ship when a helmeted head appeared to his right. Had they found their dead comrade? X waited, straining under the load. Miles was only 50 pounds, but along with the weapons and armor, it was a lot to haul up a ladder. He could feel the blood pulsing in his carotid arteries and his temples. When he risked looking up again, the man was gone. Wasting no time, X grabbed another rung and kept climbing. At the top, he whispered to Miles to keep quiet, and then peeked over the side, giving the area a quick scan. To the right, several armored soldiers were standing around a barrel while something cooked over a metal grate. Neither of them seemed to be aware of the dead man in the nest above, but X could see the blood striping down the turret. The left side was open deck between the rail and the middle of the ship. He got over the railing and bent down to let Miles onto the deck. The center of the ship was a metal garage and storage area for containers. He had spent days studying the layout from his apartment after the bastards caught him over a year ago, just in case he ever tangled with them again. Now was his chance to even the scales. Hugging the pocked metal wall and keeping low, he moved with the assault rifle shouldered. This weapon had no suppressor, and any gunfire would surely attract every soldier on board. But he was ready for a firefight. He had never been much for sneaking around. He stopped when he got to the edge of the garage. The doors on the right were open, and inside were more vehicles and the shipping containers. The bow was clear of contacts, but several crates were stashed along the deck, blocking his view. Just as X was about to move into the garage, Miles nudged him. The dog's head was pointed at the crates, keying on something that X had apparently missed. Crouching down, X studied the rust-darkened metal before finally glimpsing the silhouettes of two figures strapped between crates. It had to be Roger and Magnolia. He reached down to pat the dog's head, glad he had lugged him up the ladder. X pulled a knife from his vest and raised his rifle in his other hand, prepared to make a run for the divers. but he didn't get the chance. A klaxon screamed overhead, and the sound of men yelling in Spanish came from all directions. Cursing, he sheathed the knife.
"Stay," he said to Miles.
Then he stepped around the side of the garage with his rifle up and the safety off.
"Let's see if you still got it, old man."
He squeezed the trigger and fired a burst at each of the three men standing outside the shipping containers. Two of them went down right away, but the third staggered until X shot him through the helmet. X ejected the spent magazine and pulled another from his vest, slapped it in, and did a quick scan of the garage. Two more cazadores came around the other side of the entrance to see what was happening. He raised the freshly loaded rifle and fired just as one of the men stopped and raised his hands in the air. A three-round burst sent the man buckling, and he collapsed in a limp heap onto the deck. The next burst hit the second soldier. He fell backward over the rail with a muffled scream and a splash. Return fire ricocheted off the deck beside X, and he rolled for cover. He came up on one knee and fired at the turret on top of the garage. The bullets pinged off the side of the armored wall, and X waited until a helmet popped up again to pull the trigger. This time, the round punched through a visor slot, finishing the job with a small spray of blood. As X looked for the next target, Miles barked, but not at him. He was barking at the two men flanking them from the bow. They had been hidden by the crates, and now they were slinking toward Magnolia and Roger with machetes. The men both darted for cover as X brought up his gun. He ran after them, firing as he moved and hitting one in the back. The second vanished in the maze of crates. X stopped to pull out his blade again and cut Roger free.
"Thank God you found us," Roger said. "They were going to eat—"
"Shut up and call Michael for evac," X said.
He looked over at Magnolia.
"You okay?"
She managed to nod, but the two dents in her helmet told X she had taken a beating. At least she was still in one piece.
"Go!"
X shouted as soon as they were free. Keeping his rifle tight, X moved toward the crates, sweeping for contacts. He pivoted around the first crate with Miles on his heels, wondering whether they should abandon the hunt. He wasn't sure how many of the ghouls were still left on the ship. It might be better to get Mags and Roger to safety while he had the chance. But he also didn't like the idea of turning his back on someone armed with at least a machete.
"Bark when you see him, Miles," X ordered.
He jumped up, grabbed the lip of the crate, and then hauled himself to the top. From his new vantage point, he saw movement around the next crate. The man had his machete up and was moving directly for Miles. Cords hung over his shoulders like metal dreadlocks, connecting his helmet with the tanks on his armored back. X whistled from above, and the man looked up in time to catch two rounds to his helmet and a third in the tank on his back. One of the cords disconnected, hissing and jettisoning air.
"Help!"
came a scream. He whirled back to the center of the ship where a hulking cazador held a sawtoothed blade pressed to Roger's throat. Magnolia was backed against the gunwale, eyes wide behind her visor.
"Let him go,"
she snarled. Two more cazadores were moving on her. One of them unslung a shotgun.
"Drop it,"
shouted the man holding Roger captive. It was then that X noticed the crushed siren skulls on his shoulders.
"El Pulpo."
The scar on his neck itched as he looked at the leader of the cazadores. The bastard wouldn't hesitate this time. He would kill all three of them and barbecue them right alongside the siren still grilling over the oil drum. X steeled himself to make a call that would haunt him for the rest of his life. There just wasn't enough time to save them both. His heart ached when he made his decision. Bringing his rifle up, he fired several bursts at the two men approaching Magnolia, hitting the one with the shotgun first. He dropped from a headshot, but the second man took a round to the chest and kept moving with his cutlass raised, apparently determined to take Magnolia with him. Maybe if X had dispatched them both with headshots, he would have had a chance to save Roger, but he was forced to spend another second killing the man with the blade. Three bullets sent him crashing into the railing. Magnolia was already running toward El Pulpo as X pivoted, finger on the side of the trigger. They were both too late. El Pulpo loosened his grip on Roger, and then thrust the blade into Roger's back, lifting him off the ground. Magnolia screamed, holding up her hands and freezing, as if she might fix what had happened if she could just hold still enough. Roger squirmed, his feet kicking.
"Help!"
he croaked.
"Someone help me!"
El Popo pulled the blade free from Roger and unslung his machine gun as Roger toppled onto the deck. X fired first, aiming for the eye he had destroyed with a needle nearly 2 years ago. But his labored breathing threw off his aim, and the bullets punched into armor below the elbow. The machine gun clattered onto the deck. El Pulpo let out a muffled roar and ran for cover as X continued firing until his magazine went dry. Miles barked ferociously and gave chase, with his master right behind him. X dropped the empty machine gun and unslung the long rifle as he ran. Bringing it up, he fired two rounds at the escaping cannibal leader. A window shattered and a tire went flat, but El Pulpo disappeared before X could take him down for good.
"Miles, back!" X shouted.
The dog returned, and X hurried over to Magnolia. She was on her knees next to Roger, cradling his helmet. X scanned for contacts again, keeping his barrel on the garage.
"We gotta move," he said,
his voice even gruffer than usual. Roger wheezed, peppering the inside of his helmet with blood. He held up a gloved hand to Magnolia and said,
"Sorry. I never..."
His words trailed off in a coughing fit. Magnolia grabbed Roger by his chest plate, trying to lift him up.
"You're going to be fine. Come on, get up."
"We gotta go, Mags," X said.
He looked down at Roger. How could he apologize to the man for choosing Magnolia? Roger coughed again, more blood flecking the inside of his cracked visor. His suit had been compromised, and the rads here were off the graph. Roger seemed to understand this.
"Too late for me. Could already feel myself getting sick."
Miles nudged up alongside Roger, nuzzling his arm and whining softly. Roger looked up at X, his eyes clear and steady.
"Tell my parents that the good chisel set is in my footlocker. And Magnolia, I always..."
His eyelids fluttered, and his hand fell away from Miles's head as his body went limp. X grabbed Magnolia and pulled her away, though she fought him at first. They moved to the railing. The ship had left the pier, and they were in the open ocean now. More shouts came from the bow as Cazador soldiers streamed up from the lower decks in response to the gunfire. A voice that had to be El Pulpo's roared behind X. He grabbed Miles under one arm and took Magnolia's hand with the other.
"Come on, Mags. Let's dive."
Michael stood next to Layla's bed in the medical ward. She was sedated and sleeping peacefully, but she had lost a lot of blood. As soon as they reached the hive, she would need surgery, assuming she made it that long. Michael was still struggling to understand what had happened on the ship. X had brought Miles and Magnolia back, all of them dripping wet. But Roger wasn't with them. Magnolia sat in a chair nearby with her battered head cupped in her hands, spiky black and blue hair like a storm cloud around her head. Timothy was there too, monitoring Layla's vitals.
"Where's X?" Michael asked.
Timothy paused a moment, apparently tapping into the ship's video system.
"He's watching Samson, Aaron, and Les make their final repairs in the engine room."
"Final repairs?" Michael asked. "They're almost done?"
"It would be more accurate to call them the final repairs before the ship is airworthy. More work will need to be done once we get clear of the storm."
Michael looked at Layla, his mind in a fog. He ran his finger along the back of her hand, but she remained unconscious, unmoved by his touch.
"Mags, are you okay?" he asked.
Her pale face was blotchy with dried blood from the head injuries she had received, and the tears she had shed over Roger. But it was the radiation exposure that worried Michael the most. But for the medical supplies X had brought in his bike trailer, she would likely have died from it, and Layla would have never made it this long. Neither woman was out of danger yet, though. A voice came over the PA system.
"Timothy, this is Samson. I fixed our biggest problem, which is a venting issue. Engine should be good to fire up now."
Michael glanced at the wall-mounted monitor studying the data. The secondary systems were mostly functional, but he was concerned about the hull's integrity. A few more well-placed lightning hits could send them crashing back to the surface.
Waiting for your orders, sir, Timothy said. Michael nodded.
Fire it up.
The AI vanished from the room, leaving him alone with Layla and Magnolia. Michael knew they could have used his help below decks, but he didn't want to leave her side. Magnolia joined him and put her hand on his shoulder.
She's going to be okay, she whispered.
Michael could tell by her tone that she wasn't convinced. The ship vibrated as Timothy brought the engine online. For a few minutes, they waited there in silence. The hatch opened and Dex strode inside. He had trimmed his beard and was wearing black fatigues and a tactical button-down shirt that hung loosely over his lean frame.
"How's everybody doing?"
he asked, his gruff voice almost a bark. Michael forced a half-smile.
"Layla's hanging in there. A real fighter," he replied. "Are Aaron, Les, and Samson still in engineering?"
"Don't worry. Miles is watching them,"
X said. He jerked his chin at Magnolia.
"How are you, kid?"
Magnolia shrugged a shoulder.
"Alive."
X then reached forward, hesitated slightly before making contact, and put a hand on Magnolia's arm. Michael suddenly wondered how long it had been since X touched another human being.
"I'm sorry I couldn't save Roger," he said quietly.
Tears fell from Magnolia's eyes. She wiped them away quickly but didn't reply. A glowing column of light solidified between X and Michael as Timothy's form took shape. Michael's stomach dropped when he saw the expression on the AI's normally calm features.
"Sir, we have a problem."
Michael cursed.
"What now?"
"Sirens," Timothy replied. "Hundreds of them. All flocking toward the ship." Magnolia brushed a bright blue lock of wet hair from her swollen eyes.
"The engine. It must be attracting them the same way they're attracted to the batteries in our suits."
"Watch Layla," Michael said to Magnolia, knowing he had no choice but to act now. He kissed Layla on the cheek.
"I love you, and I'll be right back."
Layla's eyelids fluttered, but she remained unconscious.
"You're with me, X," Michael said.
They hurried outside and through the corridor toward Central Command. The passages still smelled like smoke, and stains from the white fire suppressant foam covered the destroyed stations inside the bridge. Monitors on the central island flashed data.
"Sit, Rep. Timothy," Michael said.
He made his way over to a secondary monitor.
"Secondary systems are operational and the engine is online," Timothy replied.
"Bring up the video feed."
The monitor on the starboard side of the room came online, and Michael instantly saw what had the AI so concerned. The camera zoomed in on a vortex of sirens flapping into the sky above what Michael assumed was the ITC building. They nearly blotted out the horizon as they made their way toward deliverance.
"Get us into the air," Michael said.
He rushed over to the captain's chair, took a seat, and brought the comlink to his lips.
"Everyone, this is Commander Everhart. Buckle in and prepare for a bumpy ride. We're leaving Miami."
Although he wanted to be at Layla's side, her life depended on his staying here and monitoring the flight.
"Max, take care of Layla for me," he said, finishing the transmission.
The turbofans clicked on below the ship, and the entire vessel vibrated as it lifted off the field.
"Retracting landing gear," Timothy said, working through his pre-flight announcements methodically with no apparent sense of emergency.
"Just get us out of here," Michael yelled.
He watched the sirens on the screen as they approached, their frayed wings and pale naked forms moving ever closer, flapping like huge albino bats.
"Can they get inside?"
X asked, taking the chair next to Michael's. Timothy nodded from his position next to the central island.
"There are multiple areas through which they could access the ship, including the port exhaust conduits, the..."
"Not now, Timothy," Michael groaned. "Just get us the hell out of here."
Lightning bloomed across the skyline, backlighting the creatures homing in on the ship. Michael closed his eyes briefly and then looked at the screen, hoping they would be spared from any lightning strikes. So far, they had managed to avoid the worst of the storm. The sirens weren't so lucky. Several cartwheeled to the ground, their blackened carcasses smoking. Deliverance rose into the sky, but if they went much higher, they would be too close to the storm clouds.
"Keep us low and punch it," Michael said,
his voice hoarse from yelling so much. "Bringing on thrusters 3 and 4, Timothy said. A loud clanking sounded, but the ship didn't lurch forward. The whining that followed told Michael something was wrong, and an alarm confirmed it a moment later. The sirens were closing in, having grouped themselves into the V-formation that Michael knew all too well. He could almost hear their high-pitched wails. "Thrusters 3 and 4 are offline," Timothy said unnecessarily. Another clank sounded, echoing through the ship as the turbofans kept them hovering. Without thrusters, they would have to go right into the flight path of the sirens if they wanted to leave Miami. It was either that or use the turbofans to take them into the storm, which was suicide. "Engage forward thrusters," Michael said. "Thrusters 1 and 2 are online." The turbofans shut off, and the powerful thrusters propelled them away from the stadium and toward the coast. X fastened his harness, and they both watched the screen as Deliverance rose over the ruined buildings and raced toward the oncoming sirens. Michael swallowed hard and grabbed the armrests as the 100-strong flock soared toward the massive ship, traveling at 50 miles an hour on a collision course with the flapping wall of pallid, diseased flesh. Timothy announced, "Contacts in 3, 2, Michael focused on the screen, watching the beasts in awe. The formation broke at the last second, the creatures fanning out to either side of the ship. Clank, clank, clank. The sound of the sirens crashing into the hull echoed inside the bridge. X let out a chuckle, but a blast of lightning ended it and he followed Michael's lead, grabbing the armrests. "Warning, threat level critic." Timothy silenced the automated female voice and turned off the klaxon as they raced over the city, turning away from the shoreline and back the way they had come. The sirens circled after them, but the airship sped away, leaving them in its exhaust trail. Deliverance slowly did a 360-degree turn, in the process taking another lightning blast to the starboard hull. A distant boom roared through the passages and into the bridge.
"Timothy, sit rep!"
Michael yelled over the noise.
"Fire in compartment 6, he replied. "I am sealing it now."
Through the chaos, Michael managed to keep his eyes on the screen. They were heading out over the ocean as they continued to turn. In the distance, he glimpsed what had to be the rusty Cazador ship carving through the swells. It was the last thing he saw before the screen and the entire bridge went dark. 28. Jordan stood in the bridge of the Hive with his hands clamped to the yoke wheel. The countdown ticked away in his mind. He couldn't wait to see his beautiful new ship. The ship that would keep humanity alive and thriving for centuries to come and would ensure that every child who grew up in the sky knew the name Leon Jordan.
"Sir, we're receiving a broadcast," Hunt reported from his station.
"Relay it to my headset," Jordan replied.
His earpiece crackled, and Samson's voice boomed.
"Captain Jordan, this is Chief Engineer Samson. Do you copy?"
"Good to hear your voice," Jordan said, pulling the headset away from his ear to escape the deafening volume.
"What's the condition of Deliverance?"
There was a short pause, long enough to fill Jordan with anxiety.
"So we took a beating on the way out of the city and are down to 1 thruster and 3 turbofans, but the engine is holding steady and we should be able to make all necessary repairs in the skies."
Jordan breathed out, his nerves settling. Deliverance had survived the storms, not that he had any doubts about her abilities.
"Excellent news, Samson. Stay safe, and we will see you soon."
He shut off the comms and slowly turned the wheel toward the updated coordinates marking Deliverance's position. The dark clouds swirled on the wall-mounted main display, and he scanned them for the first signs of the airship.
"How far out are we, Ensign Ryan?" Jordan asked.
"About 5 minutes, sir," came the reply from the station above.
Jordan nodded, eyes flitting from the screen to the monitor displaying altitude, speed, and systems data. It was hard to contain his excitement. After all his sacrifices, they were finally entering a new era of human history. Today would mark a new beginning for the survivors of what had once been the dominant species on the planet. And someday, long after he was dead, his legacy would live on through their descendants, when Deliverance and the Hive finally set back down to repopulate Earth.
"Should be getting a visual in a minute or so," Ryan said.
Hunt walked down the ramp and stood next to Jordan.
Sir, I just wanted to say...
Jordan looked over at his second-in-command.
Yes?
To say thank you, and that I'm proud to serve with you, Hunt finished. A quick scan of the room revealed officers from all directions looking down at Jordan, excitement and something else in their gaze, something that Jordan hadn't seen for a very long time.
Hope.
He nodded proudly and turned back to the screen. He pushed the mic back to his lips and ordered Hunt to open a ship-wide transmission.
To every soul on the Hive, this is Captain Jordan speaking. In a few minutes, we will be docking with the airship Deliverance. This ship is newer, faster, and better in every way than the Hive, and I'm proud to bring her home to us in the skies.
What he didn't tell them was that not everyone would be moving over to the new airship. The lower deckers, the sick, and any other undesirable passengers would stay on the Hive. And while the two ships would remain in the skies together, they wouldn't be connected.
In the coming months, we will deploy more Helldiver teams to the surface to retrieve the parts we need to make Deliverance a second lifeboat for humanity, Jordan continued. Once our engineers have retrofitted Deliverance, we will have the ability to grow more food, recycle more clean water, and provide a better standard of living.
He left out the part about where the Helldivers would come from and how many would likely die in the process. All that mattered, and all that these people needed to hear, was the promise of more food and nicer accommodations. Jordan thought of Katrina, and then of their child, who would never get to see Deliverance. But this time his heart wasn't filled with sorrow. The sacrifices were all worth it. And best of all, Jenga had been wrong all along. There would be no man to lead them to a new home under the water or in the water. There was just one man, Leon Jordan, the hero who had found a home for humanity in the skies. Several voices rang out behind him, and he followed Hunt's finger to the wall-mounted monitor.
"There she is," he whispered.
The smooth hull of Deliverance was the most beautiful thing he had ever seen. Every porthole in the central section of the ship glowed white, and on the top, red lights flashed. A beacon of hope in the darkness. Magnolia sneaked a glance through one of the portholes as the Hive came into focus. She had seen the ship from the outside dozens of times during her dives, but now that she compared it to the Deliverance, she could appreciate just how battle-scarred and rickety the old ship was.
"Keep away from the windows," Michael said. "They must have removed the hatches over the portholes for some reason."
"I told you," Les said. "Jordan purged the ship of the past."
"That doesn't make any sense," Magnolia said. "There's no way he'd get away with something like that. The people would riot."
"But would they really? People got used to things, even terrible conditions, if they were downtrodden long enough." Part of Magnolia wondered why they were even bothering to rescue the Hive from Jordan's control.
"Because Roger's parents are still on board. The Mintels are worth saving. And I still have to kill Jordan for what he's done."
She wriggled in the oversized armor that had come from Del Toro's corpse. X was brilliant, retrieving the gear and weapons from the field in Miami before Deliverance took to the sky. It was odd wearing the suit of a dead man. But if it got her closer to Jordan, it was worth it. The idea of throttling him was the only thing keeping her going. They hadn't been able to retrieve Roger's body. He was out there on that terrible ship, floating toward the metal islands. Magnolia wished she'd been able to bring him home to his parents, but she could at least tell them that he was brave to the end. Magnolia looked over at Michael, who was wearing Lore's armor. He looked so young standing next to X. It was strange to see the current and former commanders of Team Raptor side by side. X was wearing the armor he had taken from Sergeant Jenkins, a fact that had Aaron on edge. She stood near the hatch with Les and Samson, and although the rest of them carried automatic rifles, none of the three standing up front were armed.
"Remember, Samson," Michael said. "As soon as we dock, you go straight to engineering and take control of the systems. Les, you get your ass to the brig and release Katrina. And your boy, too, while you're there."
"Understood," Samson said.
You got it, Commander Everhart, Les replied.
Magnolia cast a wary eye over them. Samson was brilliant, but he was also part of the system. She barely knew Les, although he seemed a decent enough man. And as for Aaron, she had just lost her father. But even before that, there had been something off about her. Ever since she came home from the mission that killed most of her team, she had been withdrawn. Back in the good old days, Magnolia had gone drinking with her a few times. But after that last dive, she had stopped socializing with Helldivers. Magnolia wasn't sure she could trust any of them. She looked at Michael next. Could she trust him to lead them on this mission when Layla was fighting for her life back in the Medwart?
Of course you can. He's never let us down before. Magnolia hated herself for even thinking it. But her nerves were getting to her. The pain from Roger's death was making her loopy. She couldn't stop thinking about all the things that had been left unsaid between them, all the things she would have done differently if she had known that their days together were numbered. X cleared his throat, snapping Magnolia from her thoughts.
Once the militia boards the ship, we're only going to get one chance at taking down Jordan. You've got to keep calm.
Magnolia gave him a solid nod.
Can't wait.
I'm good, X, Michael said.
I know, he replied.
Remind me how this is going to work, Samson said. He folded his arms over his belly. Because I really don't think you all blending in is going to work.
Jordan's not stupid, Michael replied. He'll send in the militia to search Deliverance. When they board, we'll move over to the Hive, pretending to be the crew he sent over. The armor we bagged off Del Toro, Ola, Lore, and Jenkins will disguise us long enough to get aboard the Hive. By the time anyone knows what's going on, we'll be on our way to the bridge.
Aaron turned to glare at X, rage in her eyes.
You shouldn't be wearing his armor.
I'm sorry about your dad, X said. But
maybe we should just let Les and Samson go over first, Magnolia interrupted.
You can trust me, Aaron said. I hate Jordan as much as you all do. But I'll never forgive you for what you did.
Fair enough, X said. Not asking your forgiveness. Let's just get this done.
Magnolia scrutinized Aaron for a lie, but she turned back to the hatch that would connect with the Hive before Magnolia could get a solid read. Timothy's voice sounded in Magnolia's earpiece.
Preparing to dock with the Hive in T-minus 2 minutes, said the AI.
Michael drew in a deep breath and released it inside his helmet. He looked at everyone in turn, taking extra time to study Aaron and Samson.
You all ready? He asked.
Everyone nodded. A countdown sounded at 1 minute. Les, Aaron, and Samson all stepped up to the hatch. An enclosed walkway clicked and clacked as it extended from Deliverance into the blue.
Stand by for docking procedures, Timothy said. Connecting in 3, 2...
A jolt rocked the ship as the walkway connected with the airlock on the Hive. Michael, X, and Magnolia took up positions in the quarters they had picked earlier, down the corridor from the bridge. Miles was waiting for them inside, tail wagging. They readied their weapons and moved to the side of the hatch. The airlock clicked open farther down the passage, and voices sounded in the tunnel. Jordan's soldiers had boarded Deliverance. Michael and X pressed their backs against the bulkheads, and Magnolia aimed her rifle at the hatch. The footfalls grew louder, then passed by outside.
A team of 5 engineers and 3 militia soldiers has boarded the ship, Timothy said over the private comm channel that fed into their helmets.
Copy, Magnolia whispered.
3 more soldiers just boarded, Timothy added. One appears to be an officer with the rank of lieutenant.
Hunt, Magnolia said quietly.
Michael nodded back. He checked his HUD for the time.
We need to give Les a few more minutes.
They waited in silence, Magnolia's heart thumping so hard she could hear it.
The boarders have moved to the 1st and 2nd quadrants of the ship, Timothy announced.
Michael gestured toward X. He nodded back and opened the closet door. After herding Miles inside, he bent down and told the dog to stay. Miles whined and licked X's hand as he shut the door, watching him until the last second. Magnolia hoped the dog wouldn't start barking at the wrong moment and blow their cover, but X seemed to think Miles was smarter than the average helldiver. Magnolia grabbed the handle on the hatch and slowly opened it. She backed away and let X take point. Her head and heart ached, but in a few minutes she was finally going to get the revenge she had been craving ever since Jordan sabotaged her chute.
"Commander Everhart," Timothy said, "I'm detecting movement outside the hatch on the hive. There appears to be additional soldiers."
"Changes nothing," Michael said. "Just stay focused on the approach. The hive doesn't have cameras like Deliverance. Jordan can't see us coming."
A chill ran through Magnolia's body. Something felt wrong, like walking into a trap. She kept the hunch to herself and took a deep breath to calm her nerves as they approached the open hatch leading to the tunnel. X was first around the corner and moved into the enclosed space. Two soldiers were standing sentry on the other side, backs turned, facing the corridors of the hive, probably to keep back any passengers who wanted to see the new ship. X and Michael moved quickly and took them both out with blows from their rifle butts.
"Go, go, go,"
X croaked. Magnolia darted past the unconscious soldiers. Michael was limping, but he moved fast enough to keep up with her and X. Maybe that meant they were slowing down in their old age. The bridge wasn't far. It would take them only a few minutes to reach the command center. Maybe even less with the corridors this empty.
Wait. Where the hell was everybody? This place should be teeming with passengers.
X held up a fist just before they reached the final turn that would lead them to the bridge. He readied his rifle and peeked around the corner. Then he pulled back and held up two fingers, signaling the number of guards outside the hatch. This was it. Either their ruse worked, and they would be able to walk onto the bridge unimpeded, or all three of them would be gunned down in the next 30 seconds. X walked around the corner, calmly cradling his rifle. Michael and Magnolia followed, trying to look as though they belonged here.
"Hey, guys, Lieutenant Hunt told us to come back with the thing we found on Deliverance," Michael said, pitching his voice half an octave lower.
The guards exchanged a glance.
"Didn't hear nothing about that," the man on the right said.
"You gotta check it out, man," Michael said. "I didn't think this shit still existed."
The guard tilted his head.
"Frank, is that you?"
"What'd you find?" the other militia soldier said.
Michael gestured toward X, who strode forward and raised his rifle.
"I'm back," X said, smashing them both in the face before either could react.
They crumpled to the floor, and X pushed the button to open the hatch. Magnolia strode onto the deck with her rifle raised, finger along the trigger guard. She was prepared to shoot if someone got in her way, but she didn't want to kill anyone besides Jordan.
"Everyone down!" she shouted.
Michael and X fanned out to the right and left, covering the room with their rifles.
"Where's Jordan?" Michael demanded.
Ensign Ryan raised his hands from his station.
Who are you?"
X pulled his helmet off.
"It can't be," someone gasped.
Ryan shook his head.
"No. You're dead."
"I should be,"
X said.
"Guess I didn't get the memo. Jordan sure went to a lot of trouble to make sure I didn't come back."
A voice crackled in Magnolia's helmet as she scanned the room for the captain, the man responsible for the deaths of Roger, Weaver, Ty, Pipe, and so many others. He needed to be brought to justice, and by her.
"Commander Everhart, we have a problem," Timothy said over the comm link.
Magnolia froze.
"Shit," she thought. "Jordan isn't here. The fucker outflanked us."
"Captain Jordan has just boarded Deliverance with the crew," Timothy said, confirming her fear. "They are carrying bags with them."
Magnolia turned and bolted out of the room. X and Michael ran after her. The sneaky bastard had tricked them and was about to steal their airship. She had felt something was off, but she put it down to her grief over Roger. X had taught her to trust her gut, but she had second-guessed herself. It didn't matter now. All that mattered was getting back aboard Deliverance. She raced through the corridors, leaving Michael and X behind. Halfway there, the PA system came online.
"Passengers of the Hive, this is Captain Jordan speaking. Tonight I've done what I promised. I've brought you a new home called Deliverance.
I'm boarding her now, and I must say, she is beautiful.
Magnolia ran faster, anger fueling her as she listened to Jordan's voice.
Unfortunately, we have been betrayed yet again by the Helldivers. They are on the Hive now, attempting to lead a mutiny against me. We cannot let them succeed.
Hurry! Magnolia shouted over her shoulder.
A quick glance showed X close on her heels, but Michael was falling behind. There was a wild, panicked look in his eyes, and sweat dripped down his too pale face.
Layla, he gasped.
Magnolia cursed again. Layla was defenseless. If Jordan and his goons got to her first, he'd have no problem murdering an unarmed woman in her hospital bed. A distant clanking noise sounded ahead, and Magnolia's heart nearly stopped when she realized it was the bridge connecting the two ships. The platform was already retracting.
You have to stop them, Timothy, Magnolia shouted.
I have been locked out of the system by the engineers, replied the AI. Captain Jordan has control of Deliverance.
Magnolia pushed her body to its limit, lungs and muscles burning. The intersection that would lead them to the tunnel was just ahead, but she feared they were already too late.
No, it doesn't end like this.
Until these traitors are captured and killed, I will be taking Deliverance to a safe distance, Jordan said. It would be in the best interests of everyone aboard the Hive to find the mutineers and stop them using whatever force is necessary. Until then, good luck.
Magnolia stopped at the hatch to the tunnel. The two unconscious guards still lay there. All along the corridor, confused passengers emerged from their shelters, talking in hushed voices. Several of them looked at Magnolia, Michael, and then X. And then they noticed the two motionless bodies on the floor.
They killed the guards, someone shouted. There, yelled one of the lower deckers. Those are the traitors.
Magnolia turned her attention to the porthole windows and saw movement on Deliverance as it slowly pulled away. Jordan was there with Hunt and several militia soldiers, watching the two airships separate. She pounded the glass so hard it hurt her hand. The filthy passengers closed in around the trio of divers.
Stay back, Michael shouted. Jordan's lying. He's the traitor.
Everyone back, X yelled.
Is that Commander Rodriguez? Someone said.
Another person gasped.
He's a ghost.
The PA system suddenly clicked back on, Jordan's voice coming online.
No, he said. It can't be.
Magnolia pivoted back to the porthole window, thinking he had somehow seen X.
Stop them!
Jordan shouted. Everyone crowding around Michael, Magnolia, and X stopped, looking up at the wall-mounted speakers. Others crowded around the portholes for a view of the other ship. Magnolia squinted at motion in the passage aboard Deliverance. A tall man aimed a pistol at Jordan, and a woman. Not just any woman, Magnolia realized. It was Katrina, and she was holding a sword to Jordan's neck. He had his hands up, and the other militia soldiers were all standing with their hands on their heads. Sloane from the brig and a teenage boy were watching over them.
Is that, she started to say, when Michael finished the thought for her.
Trey Mitchell's and Sloane, he said.
Magnolia, trying to make sense of what was happening, made a conscious effort to slow her breathing. Jordan hadn't seen X after all. He was talking about Les and Katrina. They had made it back on to Deliverance. And they had Jordan in custody. She wanted to be the one to kill the captain, but seeing Katrina with the sword to his throat was still satisfying. As long as she got to be there when Katrina spilled his blood on the deck. Les held the same gun he had shot Ola dead with, but this time it was pointing at Captain Jordan. Les's son Trey was there too, along with Katrina and Sloane. In the end, it was the hard-faced woman running the brig who had been the key to taking down Jordan.
You can't do this, Jordan shouted at them. I've saved us all. I saved humanity.
No, said Katrina coldly. You're nothing but a cancer to humanity.
I've stood by and watched your reign of terror for too long, Sloane said. Today it ends.
Les checked the militia soldiers to make sure none were trying to maneuver on them. All three men, as well as Lieutenant Hunt, were now face down on the deck, hands tied behind their backs. He looked through the porthole windows at movement on the other side aboard the Hive. Michael, X, and Magnolia were surrounded by a growing crowd of lower deckers.
"Hit the bridge button, Sloan," Les ordered.
She moved over to the bulkhead and hit the button. The clanking of the platform sounded as it reached back out toward the Hive.
"I should make you suffer," Katrina said. "I should skin you alive and then dump your body back to the surface so you can see it for yourself."
She pushed the blade deeper, nicking his neck and drawing blood. He reared his chin back, crazed eyes focused on Katrina.
"You never deserved me, you selfish—"
His eyes widened even further as Katrina let out a scream of rage. She pulled the blade away from his neck and thrust it into his chest. Jordan let out an astonished croak, his mouth agape. He grabbed the hilt and pulled her toward him. Around the blade, a crimson bloom spread outward across the white uniform jacket. Katrina shoved the sword deeper until the blade pushed through and out his back, hitting the bulkhead with a clank. Impaled on his own sword, Jordan wore a mask of shock, rage, and fear. She leaned closer until she was just inches from his face.
"What have you done?" Hunt said from the deck.
"Shut up," Sloane said, giving the lieutenant a swift kick in the ribs.
I loved you," Jordan stuttered.
He fell to his knees, and Katrina calmly put her foot against his chest and pulled the sword free. He toppled onto his back and pressed his hand down on the wound, his lips moving as he tried to speak. Les looked over as the bridge clanked and connected with Deliverance. The hatch opened, and the other divers moved away from the portholes on the Hive to cross the enclosed bridge. When Les looked back at Katrina, she was calmly wiping the blade on Jordan's white trousers, first one side and then the other. The captain stared up at her in disbelief, his feet squirming. No matter how hard he pressed, his hand couldn't stop the gushing blood. It bubbled out of his mouth, his lips still moving as he tried to speak. Magnolia was the first one onto Deliverance. She slowed and looked at Jordan as he let out a final sigh. There was no smile on her face, just a stern look of justice delivered.
"Jordan's dead," Michael said into the comm mic. His voice got louder as he repeated the message. "Captain Leon Jordan is dead."
The passengers from the Hive made their way over to Deliverance. A bottleneck formed on the bridge just outside the hatch where the first of the lower deckers had stopped to gawk at the gory scene.
"Back," X said. "It'd be a real good idea to stay the hell back."
Blood continued to pool across the deck around Michael's feet. He swallowed, part of him disgusted, but part of him filled with a grim satisfaction at the sight of the captain's corpse. Katrina dropped the blade onto the floor and sobbed when she saw the other divers.
"Cat,"
Magnolia said, enveloping her in a hug.
"I thought you were dead," she said, gripping Magnolia tight.
Time seemed to slow and then stop altogether as dozens of passengers pushed past X. He gave up trying to hold them back. Within minutes, 30 turned into 50, and then 100. Young, old, sick, healthy, all of them staring in awe at the clean, warmly lit corridors.
"Welcome to your new home,"
Michael said to the people he had known his entire life.
"Welcome to Deliverance."
Both Trey and Les nodded at Michael, who nodded back, and then turned away as the other divers celebrated. Sloane hauled off Lieutenant Hunt and the soldiers who had helped Jordan escape. Seeing this, some lower deckers began to cheer. Several claps turned into a din of shouts and applause. X pushed his way out of the clogged passage and vanished. Michael followed him, anxious to check on Layla. He made his way through the throngs of filthy passengers, only to freeze when he saw Timothy's translucent form.
"I'm sorry, sir, but I couldn't stop her," he said.
Michael tilted his head at the AI. Then he saw her. Layla was resting against a bulkhead, one hand on her gut.
Layla, Michael shouted.
He ran over to her, taking off his helmet as he ran.
What are you doing here?